Good evening, James McKenney here with my Science Hour, January 21st, 2021. I'm going to concentrate on foreign language proficiency tonight. So this is for students, parents, and anybody who would either like to learn a foreign language or maybe you have learned a foreign language, but you want to, you would like to improve. Or maybe you took language a long time ago in school and never really used it. And what can you do to improve? Or actually, maybe you're going on a trip. You're going on a trip and you would like to use some of your foreign language skills. So anyway, that's the main science topic. First of all, a couple of quick topics. Germany is rationing electricity. up to 30 cents a kilowatt hour. And this is once again, just like California, just like New York, just like other locations around the world who have invested heavily in three-blade wind turbines and solar. And what's going on is it doesn't work. So as a result of that, they don't have enough energy and they have to ration it. This is going on in California, too, where they have rolling blackouts. They call them brownouts, but if you're affected, it's a blackout. You don't have electricity. And so, anyway, the idea is that the world electric energy systems are collapsing. They are collapsing under their own weight, bad management, and many times, two major factors. One is the heavy investment in nuclear, which is failing. They can't maintain these old archaic nuclear power plants. They cost a tremendous amount to build, and they have not saved any money to do repair work. So anyway, just a quick notification. It's coming to a neighborhood near you, and as people move to electric cars, which is happening just at an unbelievable breakneck pace, the situation with the grid and the power supply is only going to get worse. And so then you have people like, well, now the current reigning president who wants to put trillions of dollars into the new Green Deal. And the end result will be what's happened every place else, failure. Failure of the electric grid and complete inability to run an industrial economy, a complete failure. So just another quick announcement, NASA's shell game. Remember, they were going to put a man on the moon in 2024. I said it would never happen. And there's a lot of reasons why physically and scientifically and engineering-wise, why they would never, ever be able to do that. But now the old soft shoe, they're saying, oh, that because Biden is president, they won't be able to meet that anymore. So that's the old shell game. And NASA plays that fiddle just like an old fiddle. Let's put it that way. And continually throughout their history, they've missed goals, stated big goals, a lot of hype. Get the Trekkies all revved up. Yep, everybody's going to the moon in 2024. And then when it doesn't happen, they go, oh, doggone, we didn't get enough funding. If we would have only had enough funding, we would have done better. But we didn't have enough funding. And so they're already playing that ticket, that trump card, so to speak. The other thing is here, my show, I have talked in the past when, prior to the election, etc., I made commentary, but I'm out of the business of commenting anymore. The world is going to go the route it's going, and the train, the entire world train, not the U.S. alone, is heading for the bridge, and there ain't no bridge. I don't know how much more plainly I can state it. So that's the most I'm going to say about anything. I'm simply doing what I do in my engineering, my scientific studies, etc. I spent way too much time looking at those issues I'm looking at a note here. I'm sorry. I'm trying to read my own writing. But here's a note here that a fan wrote, emailed in, and went through my webpage. Now, when you go back to the 2003 to 2006 era, if you're listening to those radio shows, the links don't work. And here's what happened. I had a server move, oh, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. I don't even remember. And in the interim move, there was not enough room on the server. So I had to go in and pull out content to get it under 10 gigabytes because I was pushing like 13 gigabytes on my web page. I had to get it under 10. So I just went into the shows. That's the biggest chunk of the memory allotment there. I went in and I just took chunks of time for my radio show, which goes back 20 years. I don't know anybody that posts their shows going back 20 years, but I do. And when people listen to them, they go, "Gee, those shows are just as relevant today as they were back then." But anyway, this fan, just to prove how crazy my fans are, and really good, crazy good, good crazy, went in and looked. Tried all the links and recorded all the ones, wrote down all the ones that did not work. So I have a complete list of those now, and I can go back into my own archives and repost those. So that'll be coming soon. Okay, so on to the paid cast, basically, that deals with this topic and dealing with foreign language proficiency. Now, this is designed as part of my coursework for students and especially parents. Now, parents are becoming more involved in their students' study habits, etc., because it's just necessary. I personally learned a second language and dabbled in some other languages, but when I was young, when I got out of college, I had Latin behind me. I had taken 2 years of German in college, and it was kind of like rote memory, so I'm not very good at just memorizing, especially German is kind of a cryptic language. English is closer to, say, Spanish or the Romance languages, Italian, or not so much French. French is kind of like very different. But anyway, I went to Mexico and I ended up teaching there. I taught in a high school, and that was my beginning effort at learning Spanish. I took a course there, and I had, like I say, 4 years of Latin in high school, so that's a good basis for any of the Romance languages. But anyway, what I'm going to talk about here is not just my experience. I ended up teaching many years in foreign languages in foreign countries. And so it's something I know about. What I did, I'll just give you a little hint. When I prepare for my classes, I would read the textbook, and I had, for example, Holliday and Resnick, a classic physics textbook, which I used in college for Physics 101, 102, and 103. First 3 semesters of physics was out of Holliday and Resnick. It's a two-volume set, just massive, with very well done. But anyway, I had the same text in the foreign language that I was teaching in. And so I would study both of them, and I would prepare my lectures with the vocabulary. And so when I went into the classroom to teach my lesson, I had my lesson plan down. And of course, then I would be involved in conversations with students, etc. And the students were good. If I would not be able to think of a word, they probably knew what word I was trying to think of in it. But as far as my technical part of my lecture, etc., was concerned, I had it all down. I had all the words down. And one day I was teaching a mathematics class. I don't remember what math class it was, but I was looking at numbers and equations. And that day, I realized I didn't have to go back to English. I didn't have to translate numbers and equations, etc., back to English and then back to the foreign language. That's when I knew I was fluent. I was proficient because I could think. I could think. I could reason. I could perform logical deductions, etc., in that language. I didn't have to translate back to English. It was no longer a crutch that I needed. And so that was the first thing that I learned about proficiency. But in any of this, immersion is very necessary. If you are, say, learning in a classroom or learning in a classroom situation in school, it's very difficult to learn a foreign language because it's just something that if you don't use it every day in your common everyday life, then it's going to be very difficult to learn that foreign language. So immersion is, and of course, that's nothing new. Anybody that deals with foreign languages, I'm not telling you anything new. But proficiency, now there's the ability to read, write, talk, and then teach. So if you're learning a language, the best way to learn it is to teach somebody else. If you got a younger brother or sister, they would be very eager to learn a foreign language if the older sister or brother would teach them. And that's one of the best ways to learn a language is to teach it. Because you have to know, it's not like it, a lot of times to teach something, you have to understand it. It's much more difficult to teach something than it is just to
believe that you are learning something. And that's something that, for example, I did a lot of tutoring in physics and mathematics. And this was, of course, I was much more advanced than the people I was tutoring, because I was tutoring people anywhere from advanced high school age up through college, through university, or graduate students. And so since I was way beyond that, I was teaching things that were, in my world, rudimentary. And that also clarified my ability to teach other people at a level. I've taught courses. The astronomy is a good example. Teaching at the university level, some students in some classes are more basic than others. And so you have different levels that you teach, and you understand that, okay, these students may not understand mathematics, so you're not going to throw a lot of mathematics at them because it's not going to make sense to them. So you teach them more in, say, parables or examples. You use examples that they can understand, like, say, a teapot boiling or, you know, other examples that are commonly understood. Whereas other people are more advanced than they would understand mathematics, then you would use mathematics because that's going to mean something to them. So anyway, the same with languages. You teach at the person's level, and a great example are little kids. I've seen little kids. I went over to visit some people one time, and their little kids were playing with other little kids, and they were going back and forth between two foreign languages, and they didn't even know it. They were just like, you know, and that's another issue that's really good if parents are bilingual. If your parents are bilingual, then you will be bilingual. I grew up in a English-only household. My parents did not know any words of foreign languages. We never used them. And so my first exposure really to a foreign language, a living foreign language, was after I got out of college. And that was my first experience in the real world of living in a culture, being immersed in a culture in a foreign language. So anyway, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go through a laundry list of different techniques and different things that you can do. And of course, online today, there's all kinds of help and courses that will teach you a language and different techniques. And so those are always good. But I'll give you one little hint here when we start. A couple little hints. The average person on the street in the world today uses around 250 words only in their vocabulary. Rarely do they stray outside of that. And so, for example, just listen to this lecture that I'm doing right now. How many really difficult words have I used so far? Really, none. I haven't used any words that you might say, well, gee, I don't know what that word means, and have to go look it up in the dictionary. So most of conversation revolves around 250 core words and maybe another few hundred outside of the secondary words, like, I'm not going to give any examples, but you understand what I mean. So the point is, with very few words and with very few verb forms, which is usually what people get tripped up on in foreign languages, is getting the verbs correct, or the order of words is another thing that catches people. That's why you can spot people, foreigners speaking English, for example, because they're trying to use the word order that they used in their language. Because word order changes, where the adjective goes, does it go before the noun or after the noun, etc. In English, you say the red barn. In some foreign languages, you say the barn red. You say the adjective after the noun. And so that's another technique, and then one of the, I'll be going through here in a minute, is to speak the word order, but in your native language. And so, you would pick a word order of the foreign language and then move the words around, but say them in English. So your mind gets used to saying the barn red. And you go, well, that's stupid. but that's the way it is in that foreign language. The adjective comes after the noun. And so if you get used to hearing that in your native language, then the barn red makes sense. And you go, okay, that's the way you say it when you're speaking that language. So anyway, let me go through a whole laundry list, and this will probably take the majority of this show because I'll discuss each one of these. Okay, so proficiency in a foreign language comes in many directions. If you go into a store or you go into a restaurant, you sit down, you have numerous methods of interpreting the foreign language. You have to read the menu. You have to associate that menu. And then the waiter is going to come up and they're going to say, hello, what would you like? And then some variations. Do you want your potatoes fried? Do you want them French fries? Do you want them baked? Do you want them mashed? Etc. And, so you have to respond to that. So you have to be a bit of attentive to what's going on there. So reading, writing, and talking, and teaching. Those are the four basic things that you have to do in a foreign language. And so you have to be able to get your point across. They also have these little translators. I got to mention this. As you see these, it's like you walk up to a person. It's the way the advertisement goes. You walk up to a person and you say in your native language, I want to know where the nearest bus station is. And then you press the button, and then these people, the ad that they have, it's like you're in China. And you say, I want to know where the nearest bus station is. And then you press the button, and the little thing translates, where's the nearest bus station in Chinese? And then the people like look surprised, and then you have this conversation back and forth with this little device. I have yet to see any of them that really work. And that's my personal experience. I've had these things on my cell phone. They come out on your cell phone. They come out on little devices that you buy, etc. And to be honest with you, I've yet to see any that really, because I'm fluent in at least one other foreign language, and from what I can tell, they don't work. And the other thing is, you're dealing with languages that are different. If you go to especially a language like Spanish, which is my second language now. And there's always things that you don't know. And sometimes very simple things that being a foreigner, you don't know. But here's the point. Every country, every part of a country has its own style of talking. You can go to a region, and they're in a especially in a third world country. In the United States, it's more, there's probably five regions. You have your Midwest, you've got your New England, you got your Florida, and down, and then you have down south like Arkansas, Alabama. They have an accent that's particular to them. And then you have West Coast, and then you have like the Pacific Northwest. And but between them, there's really not a lot of variation because the, in fact, it's interesting. I'm from the Midwest, raised in, you know, Minnesota, the heart of the Midwest. And they claim that Minnesotans are the ones that do not have any accent. And typically, when they are looking for somebody on the news media, they pick somebody that was raised in the North and in the Midwest, because it's a neutral accent. But you can go to some place like Boston, and somebody's talking to you, and they go, "Oh, you have a Midwest accent. You're the one with the accent, not them." So everybody thinks their accent is the correct one. But you can go to a foreign country, and there can be 50 different accents and manners of speaking. And then you go to a different country, and they have, once again, a different set of words that they use that are not used in other countries. And they can identify somebody by the way they call a particular fruit, for example. You're using the name that they use over in such and such a country. And they can tell because you use different words in different ways, or they use different words, say, for that particular fruit. Okay, so reading, writing, and so when you take a course, say, in a standard school setting, like high school or something, if you take a foreign language, what you're going to learn is structure, you're going to learn vocabulary, but you're not going to learn how to speak. And I know when I was in high school, I never took Spanish, but there were kids who did. And it was a Dominican sisters, nuns, and the teacher would come in from the first day and start speaking in Spanish. And there was only Spanish in the classroom. And so I never really knew how the students turned out. How did they turn out pretty well in terms of speaking? But they had a speaking experience. It was like immersion, like you did not speak English in that class. But I know people, too, that have taken 15 years of Spanish in a school setting and really have a hard time speaking. I asked one person that if they ever read, because I have a copy right here, I'm looking at it, it's Cervantes' Don Quixote, Man of La Mancha. And it's the classic Spanish. If you read that in Cervantes' original hand in Spanish, it's classic Spanish. And Spanish is a language, interestingly enough, that was frozen because there was a king of Spain, and I forget his name and what it was like back right off of the Middle Ages. And he had first of all, he had a lisp, and second of all, he solidified the Spanish language and that's why classical Spanish is very fixed. The verb structures are very fixed. The vocabulary is very fixed. And that's why Spanish today has a lot of English words in it, and or just variations of English words, because Spanish never grew as a language. English changes every day. That's why English is the most difficult language to learn. And people think, oh, English should be pretty easy to learn. No, English is, I can tell you, is the most difficult language to learn because it changes every day. And you have words that have double meanings, like Viking. Okay, Viking refers to the Norway, the people that lived, you know, 1,000 years ago and populated much of the northern islands of Ireland, etc. Those are my ancestors. But Viking is also a brand name for food. It's also a name of a football team, the Minnesota Vikings. So the word Viking, you have to understand the context it's being used in to understand what the person is talking about. Spanish is not that way. There is a word for something. The other thing is English has a word for everything. In Spanish, there are words that are used for many things. And you have to understand what I'm saying is it's a much more limited vocabulary. And reading, writing, talking. Talking is the one that most people break down on. And so I'm going to go through some techniques here of learning. And these are very simple, and that's besides any courses that you might take online or in a classroom. But here's something, is that you have to work on it every day. There's maybe a period of time, first thing in the morning, you get up, you pull out your dictionary, and this is something that I teach people how to, when you're learning a foreign language, you pick up that dictionary, and it's a dictionary, English, French, English, Spanish, English, Italian, whatever. And languages can be similar. Like Italian, I can go to an Italian movie and pretty much understand it. It's very similar to Spanish. Whereas French is not. French is a whole different ballgame. Pick up a dictionary and go through it and look at the words and their translation. And if they're very similar, in other words, you have an O at the end in one language and you don't have the O at the end in the other language, they're very similar, take a yellow marker and mark that word. That's one of your words that is very easy to learn. And if you go through the dictionary, of course, this doesn't work for Chinese. That's a whole different ballgame. I'm not going to be able to help you too much with that one. But we're talking about the European languages, and then even the Germanic languages have somewhat of a basis now in English. A little bit. They're a little bit closer. But mark those words that are similar. And by the time you get through your dictionary, you're going to have 1,000 words. And they're usually rudimentary words that you're going to use every day. So that gives you a vocabulary of between 1,000 and 2,000 words, common everyday used words. And then understand the very simple verb constructions that will get you through most situations. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go to town. I'm going to read this book. I'm going to go to sleep. All of these connections using one basic verb form. And then the infinitive of the form, like to sleep is the infinitive form of the verb. And so you can put it together with the action verb and then the infinitive, and you don't have to know all of the verb structures of that infinitive. Another thing you have to learn, and this is what's so difficult about learning English for people that are in a different foreign language, is we have so many vowel constructs. In English, there are 26 combinations of vowels. In a foreign language, you might only have 5, the A, E, I, O, U. There are no combinations of vowels that you have to learn. So the pronunciation is very strict. It's very simple. Whereas English, you have combinations of vowels, A, E, I, E, E, I, all these different combinations, which have different rules and sometimes exceptions to the rule. So for people to learn that, it's just like, what the heck is this? That's another reason why English is much more difficult to learn, is because of pronunciation of the vowels, just the vowels. And then you have combinations which don't exist in foreign language, like TH, SH, etc., that don't exist in those other languages. So people are coming into a language where there are sounds that they've never used or heard before. They don't know how to move their tongue. One thing that's really difficult for people moving from English to a foreign language is if there are like tongue rolls where you have to, like ours in Spanish, for example. If you don't have this down by the time you're like 10 years old, you're probably never going to do it correctly. You're going to have kind of a substitute sound that you do. And so that's why going from one language to another, a lot of those skills you learn as a young kid. And if you don't learn them as a young kid, they're going to be really difficult. And so that's why people speaking English, you go, wow, those people have, you know, they're never going to lose the way they talk. You're going to always be able to pick them out of a crowd because they just cannot adapt to phraseologies, things like that. But there's something also that's very unique. I always say to some people, don't ever lose your accent, because the way they talk is very, you know, they have a good voice, they have a very interesting accent, I'm not going to give examples, but there are, say, movie stars, there are famous people who are foreigners, and they have an accent, and it's very particular, but it's good. It's good. You know, there's one thing that the French don't like anybody speaking French differently than they do. They're very strict about that. They get angry. If you come in and you don't speak good French, they get angry at you. Whereas other places, they go, oh, you're a foreigner, and they treat you with respect and try and help you, but they know that you're never going to be able to speak like they do. Understanding vowel constructs is very difficult. And going to a foreign language, you're going in the easy direction because English is the hardest one. So you have to limit your vowels and vowel constructs. But anyway, then I already talked about word order and practicing that in your native language. Having a boyfriend or a girlfriend is probably one of the best ways to learn a foreign language. And so a boyfriend or girlfriend that has a different language than you do, that's one of the classic ways of learning a foreign language or just having friends. I don't mean you have to be lovers or whatever in love. You can just have friends. And that's a very good way to learn a foreign language. Let me go through some. Movies, of course, with subtitles. And watch the movie two or three times, maybe four times. Watch it many times, because in that movie, you're going to have conversation. You're going to have dialogue that's everyday dialogue. So maybe watch a movie three, four times, to the point where you understand and you can follow the movie in that foreign language without the subtitles. And so, and I'll tell you something about subtitles also. If you say you're looking at a movie that has subtitles and it's in that foreign language also, the subtitles do not correspond with what the people are really saying. And so if you get to the point where you can read the subtitle and you go, that's not what they said, it's a variation of what they said, it means the same thing, then you're probably getting pretty good at that language. Music is not a good way to learn a foreign language because songs use idiosyncrasies of the language. They use rhymes, they use sometimes terms and phrases that are nonsensical. They mean something to the people that understand that language, but it's not a good way to learn a foreign language. If you listen to English music, for example, some of it might make sense, but there's some of it that just would not make any sense at all to a foreigner, and vice versa. If you're learning a foreign language, a lot of times the music is, if it's just very simple music, okay, maybe that's okay. But music typically does not have good sentence structure. It has variations on the meaning of words, sometimes double meanings that you would not understand. And so music has a kind of an organized presentation that's very different from the spoken word. And so music is not a good way. Now, the one of the best ways to learn a foreign language is read the newspaper. Not that you're going to get good news out of the newspaper, because usually it's controlled and somebody owns that newspaper and has a political slant, etc. But the newspaper is written typically at a third grade level, because they want everybody to be able to read it. Because if they only have it very high level people, then in a language that only high level people with a lot of education would understand, they wouldn't sell many newspapers. So they have to sell a newspaper that everybody can read. So typically a newspaper is written at a third grade level so that anybody can read it, even somebody with a high school education, that not a very good education in foreign countries. A lot of times, if it's a rural area, their education is not, as good as it might be in the cities, etc. But a newspaper, reading a newspaper and understanding what it says, and then read it out loud. And here's another thing. I'd say the biggest thing about learning a foreign language is don't worry about it. People are like, oh, I might say it wrong, or I might pronounce this wrong. Like, hey, 99% of the time, people are going to know what you're trying to say. They're going, okay, you're trying to say this, that isn't how you say it, that's the wrong word, but I know what you're trying to say. Don't be afraid. It's like swimming. You can swim. Other people swim. The human being body can get in the water and swim. Your fear of that is based on your own fears. So it's like jumping in a pool, and maybe get some training before you jump in a pool and, over your head, with water over your head. But you can do it. And the biggest part, like the first time you go swimming, you're not going to have good form. You're going to have terrible form. That comes with time. You're going to learn that, if I move like this, I go faster. I can get to the other side of the pool faster. And always, if you're swimming, for example, you learn where you can, if you get in trouble or you lose confidence, you can quick put your feet down. And then you're standing on the bottom and you go, okay, now I'm going to try again. And so you swim in shallow water, deep enough so that you don't hit the bottom when you're swimming, but shallow enough so that you can put your feet down. And in fact, I taught myself how to swim when I was in high school. Nobody taught me. So I would ride my bicycle out to this lake every day that had a blocked-off pool section, nice sand beach. And on the weekdays, nobody was there. And so I would swim back and forth, and I taught myself how to swim, which eventually saved my life. I was in I'm not going to go through that, but anyway, it's the same as a language. You have to learn and become proficient, and a lot of times being on your own is good just to get going, but at a certain point you have to be confident that you can swim without putting your feet down on the bottom, because if you're in a bad situation, there's no bottom to put your feet down. You better have confidence that you can swim. Okay, so it's the same with the language, but it's getting started, and you might have to have your dictionary there to pick out words. Okay, what is this word? This is a word I need. Try and plan ahead. But the point is that don't be afraid of pronouncing wrong, of saying something wrong, etc. Don't be afraid. Just jump in and do it, and people will understand. They'll help you out. Because they go, this person is trying. If you sit there in the corner and with your head down and I don't speak the language, well, then you're never going to speak the language. You got to get out there, immerse in the language, make mistakes, let people correct you, and make stupid mistakes. Okay, that's part of it. That's part of learning a language. And, of course, little kids are learning from their parents and from friends, etc., as they're growing up, they're putting together this language package that eventually they have. When I was in grade school and high school, there was one kid who excelled at vocabulary. He would use words and would go, what does that word mean? Well, he was very versed in you know, large, complicated words, etc. I'm going to jump off to a little bit more esoteric topic, and that is understanding cultures. When you go to a foreign country, please, 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 don't bring your music, don't bring your mannerisms, don't bring your expectations. Go with the ability and with the foresight that you're going to learn the culture. And this is where the ugly American got his and her name. To go to a foreign country and say, I don't know how to count that funny money. Thinking, or the implication that the dollar is real money and their money is funny money. Don't do that. That's an example. Don't bring your music. Listen to the music of the culture where you're going. You'll enjoy it, believe me. There's a lot of wonderful music. There are countries which have 50 different native varieties of music. It's very rich in the culture. That's just an example. Food. You're going to go to places and the food's going to be different than what you're used to. You're not going to get McDonald's hamburgers. And if you go to a place, another country, don't eat McDonald's hamburgers. Go eat the food that's local, that the local restaurants. And what you're going to do there also is that's part of the immersion process in understanding the culture. So the music, the food, for example, a five-star hotel in a third world country is not going to be the same as New York City. So don't expect that. Also beware of the person who claims they're well-traveled. You know, oh, I've been to Mexico many times. Or I've been to la-da-da, such and such a place many times. And you say, oh, where did you go? Oh, it stayed in Cancun in a five-star condominium. Never left, went to the pool, never went out to meet the people, never has no idea of the culture or who the people are, what their beliefs or likes or dislikes, nothing. No, so you didn't go to Mexico. You just visited a New York hotel in a foreign country and stayed there and ate food from a restaurant that made American food with a little bit of a Mexican twist for you. Okay, so this I get all the time. Oh, somebody is well-traveled. No, they're not well-traveled. They're staying in five-star hotels in a foreign country and never leave. They don't know anything about the country or the language or the people or the culture or anything. So anyway, don't make that mistake. When you go to a country, immerse yourself in the culture. And then you will be immersing yourself in the language. And you'll understand the people through their language and through the music and through the movies and through the newspapers and understand that most foreign countries are very controlled politically. They're controlled from outside with large money interests, etc. So, and then the people, the regular people, are just regular people. They're just caught up in the system just like all other countries in the world today. They're caught up in the system. But the people that are just the regular people, they're just like you. They have their families. They love their kids. All they want is a better life for their kids. And trying to, in a lot of cases, eke out a living in a culture where it's really difficult, a lot more difficult than you have with your situation, you know, back in the first world countries. So immerse yourself in the cultures. That's a rule. And then, the mannerism in which they speak, you're going to find variations within a country where you might not even, if you say you're fluent in the language, you go to a certain region, you're not going to understand what they're talking about. And a good example in the United States is when I lived in New Orleans. New Orleans has a very specific accent, New Orleans accent. And I, of course, I just spoke normally and like from the Midwest, but the people in New Orleans had a very specific accent. And there were people in New Orleans who never, ever left New Orleans in their entire lifetime. Their entire life revolved around New Orleans and Mardi Gras. And every year they had their float with Mardi Gras, and they did all their business there. It was like a city to itself. But now go 100 miles south into the Cajun country, and wow, I mean, that's like going to another foreign country. The language is different. But I used to love to go down there. I'd get in my car on a Friday night. I'd take the weekend off from my studies at Tulane University, where I was getting my advanced physics degree. I'd get in my car and I'd drive down into the Cajun country on a Friday night. And the music was playing, the squeeze box, the Cajun music. And the Cajuns were French who settled there and just developed this entire culture based on sea life. They, you know, the boats were coming in, the shrimp, the jambalaya, the music, the, you know, the beer was flowing, you might say. But just, you know, nobody drunk, just having a good time. And the women cooking, and the men bringing in the fish from the ocean, and all this activity going on. And then if you want hot food, believe me, the Cajuns had peppers, these little teeny red peppers, and the green ones were even hotter. And they would mix that in. Oh my goodness, it was just like a sight to behold. But a completely foreign country, literally. Just south of New Orleans. New Orleans was isolated an island by itself because to get out of New Orleans, you got Lake Pontchartrain to the north, you got the causeway to the west, and then you've got a very long way to the east before you get to other civilizations. So New Orleans has always been very isolated. It's very much a tourist town. It's the fifth biggest ocean port in the world. Most people don't know that. New Orleans is an unbelievably big seaport where a lot of shipping is done. And so anyway, learning a foreign language, and there's a lot of language that's used in New Orleans that you would not ever hear anyplace else. So that's an example of being immersed in the culture, the music. New Orleans has its own music. Good grief, you know, so what I'm saying is you can go to a foreign country, and there are regions like that too, where you go to the coast, you go to the mountains, you go off to a desert region, or you go down to the jungle region, or you go down to, maybe an area that's very large and with ranches. And they have their specific music, style, attitudes, political agendas, etc. And all of this is wrapped up in the language, the music, the culture, the food. And learning the language is basic to understanding who these people are, what are their likes and dislikes, etc. And a lot of them very hardworking people. They work very hard for what they get, but they're used to hard work. And the other thing is, in a lot of these countries, there's no retirement. There's no such thing as getting a pension. So they work up to the day they die, almost. Literally, they're working for a living, and very locally, etc. Okay, so anyway, I spent a lot of time talking about this, but to learn a foreign language, you have to immerse yourself in the culture. And here's something I've said also, and this is not just dealing with languages, but this is dealing with Americans in general. The idea of the ugly American, the American that goes to a foreign country, and I'll just give an example. I had a girlfriend when I was in college, and she was from Chicago. So I went to go visit the family, and the people in Chicago, a lot of them never leave Chicago. It's Chicago, Chi-Town, whatever they call it. And I call them big city hicks. That's because they don't know anything about the rest of the world. They have never left Chicago. That's their entire universe. And so this girl's dad grew up in Chicago, never left Chicago, and he treated me, being from Minnesota, like he would ask me, are there roads in Minnesota? Do this Indians still ride horses in Minnesota? And this is the way he talked to me. I'm like, good grief, you can't be serious. You cannot be serious. I couldn't even talk to the guy. I mean, there's a guy that was made Archie Bunker look like a sweet little old man. And so anyway, the point is that there are people who think that they know everything and they're from a certain area, but they've never left there. So I call them big city hicks. And the typical term hick is from somebody from the country that's never been to the city. But you can use that in reverse too, that you have to understand the culture and be accepting of the culture where you go. It's not going to be like where you are. So the ugly American has earned this reputation abroad. Like I say, the tourist going to a country and going, oh, I don't know how to count that funny money or that pretend money. That's the people's money of their country. And they're proud of that, and that's not to be belittled. So at any rate, when you go to other places, go learn their culture. But the point I was making was that to prevent this from going on in the future, high school students from the United States, and it's not correct for all of them, but I would say a good percentage, the ones that really want to be something in the world someday and understand the world, is after they get out of high school and before they go off to advance babysitting at college, is to send the kids to a foreign country with a one-way ticket and tell them that they have to earn their way back in that foreign country. They have to work there, they have to find a job, they have to learn a language, they have to live with the people, and they have to earn the money to get their way back to the United States. In other words, they have to work at the level of people in that foreign country. That would be an experience that when they got back to the U.S., they'd go, holy cow, I didn't know the world was like that. I didn't know these people were poor. I didn't know that they had to work this hard. And, you know, the point is that it would be a major educational experience for kids. Plus, they would learn a foreign language. There is a thing, I don't know if it still exists, it was called the Peace Corps when I was in college. And kids would go off to a foreign language or a foreign country and help on projects. And they would have projects set up. It was very organized. These are ideas that will help you learn a foreign language and become immersed in that foreign language. And if you're, say you're in the United States, you're a student, you're in high school, college, whatever, spend that extra time and learn a foreign language. I would recommend picking one of the major foreign languages because the world, you might not have a choice. You might all be speaking Chinese pretty soon. When I was growing up, they used to threaten the kids to fear Russia because they would say, well, you know, in World War II, we'd all be speaking German, which implication was that would be a bad thing. And then also during the Cold War, post-World War II, it was like, well, you would all be speaking Russian or we would all be speaking Japanese if the Japanese had won the war in the Pacific. Now it looks like everybody might be speaking Chinese, at least a few variations of it. But learning a foreign language, pick one that is potentially beneficial to your economic future. In other words, if you're going to do international business, what language covers the majority of the world? And so you have the major ones like Spanish, Japanese, and of course Chinese, but there are so many variations of Chinese. Just like in India, there are how many variations of languages in India? So it's hard to pick one. Although there are languages in India that are more common that most people will understand. But the depending on where your business might lead you, it might be German and the Northern European languages are similar. So if you're going to do, say, business in Europe, that's another possibility. But pick a language and learn one language. Learn one language well. Be bilingual. Very important. Be bilingual and understand the cultures. Don't just learn the language, because if you learn the language and not the cultures that are associated with it, you're going to be about one-third the way there. You have to understand the cultures, the way they think, etc., and the way they work. And I'm learning this even today. I'm learning mannerisms within cultures, etc. So very important. And these little techniques, and get that dictionary, a paper dictionary, not an online dictionary. The reason you want a paper dictionary is because you can mark in it with your yellow marker all those words that are similar, and then go through there, and then you go, okay, I know those words. Get a book on only verbs, a verb book from that language. And there are books like 500 Verbs. If you have 500 verbs, you're going to be very close to fluent in that you can speak at a level that most people can in that foreign language. You're going to be able to converse using word structures in verb forms that are used in that country. And then read classic books that are in that language. And a lot of times those classic books will also be in English. So you can go back and forth and understand in two languages. And like I said before, when you get to the point where you can speak in a language and think in that language and not translate back to English all the time, then you know that you're fluent. So at any rate, I think this is a bit of a primer. It's a help for students and parents. I always tell the parents, you have to learn what your students are learning and then help them learn. So it's no longer the case you just send the kids to school or send them off on the online school and they're learning on their own. I believe you have to become very involved in your kids' education. So that might mean the parents also learning the foreign language with the students or helping them or directing them to someone who can actually help them also. So I hope this has been helpful, because I went through this entire process myself, and it's difficult, but it's also very rewarding. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. Remember the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is my Science Hour. We are at the crossroads. Good night.